curled into a ball and jammed my fingers in my ears. The safecracker exploded with a loud bang that echoed through the underground lair, but thankfully no alarms went off. I peeked over the top of the couch. The safe door now hung slightly ajar, charred black with wisps of smoke curling from it. I raced back over and swung it open. The safe was empty. Almost. The external drive I'd seen Joshua place inside it wasn't there, nor was anything else save for a single piece of stationery. There was a message on it. "Ben, I guess we can't trust you after all. Joshua." And then the alarm started ringing. Chapter 16. Demolition. Spider Agent Training Facility, Secret Underground Lair, September 17, 10:15 hours. Erica had given me one final instruction. If anything goes wrong, get the heck out of there. As if I was maybe going to hang out and fix myself a frozen yogurt. I grabbed the note from Joshua. After all, it was evidence, and I'd gone through a heck of a lot of trouble to get it, and bolted from the room. It wasn't only the security alarm that had gone off. The fire alarm had triggered as well. Klaxons were sounding, red lights were flashing, and the sprinklers were spraying, dousing me with water. I scurried up the spiral staircase, my shoes skidding on the wet steps, and burst through the secret door into the rec center. Out the windows I could see down into the residential area. Klaxons were ringing out there as well, and every street lamp was now flashing red. A pleasant voice kept announcing, "Security breach in central control. Security breach in central control." Spider agents were emerging from their tract homes and racing my way up the path through the tennis courts. Some really had been sleeping in. Two were in pajamas, while one wore a robe and bunny slippers. I spotted most of my instructors. Mrs. Henderson and Coach G were leading the pack. Neither appeared nearly as kind or friendly as they had during class. Instead, they looked like they'd be happy to do some harm to me. I couldn't see Joshua Halal or Murray Hill among them, but then I didn't have the time to take a very close look. Mr. Seabrook was already inside the rec center. He raced into the room with the rock wall right after I did. Since he'd come directly from the artillery range, he was heavily armed with a semi-automatic, a bandolier of ammo clips, and an assortment of other knives and guns. All I had to protect myself was a piece of stationery. I ducked into the workout room, then dodged through the exercise equipment. I reached the far side just as Mr. Seabrook entered and opened fire. Bullets pinged off the treadmills and stairmasters behind me. I veered through the yoga studio and into the bowling alley. This had only two lanes with a small rack of balls to choose from. I grabbed two, assessed Mr. Seabrook's probable speed and the rate the balls would roll, given their size and my strength, waited 2 seconds, and then bowled both of them back toward the door, one after the other. Then I ran again. From behind me, I heard the sound of Mr. Seabrook barely avoiding the first ball as it came through the doorway, but then yelping as the second one caught him in the shin by surprise. This was followed by the thwack of him landing face first on the floor, the swoosh of his semi-automatic skittering down the well-waxed bowling alley, and the clatter as it knocked over all the pins. I'd bought myself a few seconds. Beyond the bowling alley was the spa. I ducked past the steam room and the sauna to a door marked "Emergency Exit. Use only in case of emergency." This seemed to qualify. I pushed through it and found myself back in the sunshine. The main residential area, and thus all the spider agents, were now on the far side of the recreation center. However, so was the only exit from Hidden Forest. The entire area I faced was surrounded by the wall, and there was no way I was getting over that. But I'd come up with a backup plan. I ran toward the construction zone, hoping I had time to make it across the open ground before all the spider agents showed up. Erica's voice spoke in my ear, sounding concerned. Apparently she'd heard the klaxons. "Ben, has something gone wrong?"
"Yes."
"On a scale of 1 to 10, 23! My cover's blown! I'm heading for the eastern wall of the compound with the enemy in pursuit! Can you be there to get me?"
"How soon?"
"Right now would be good." I was almost to the construction zone.
"We're on our way," Erica said.
"How are you getting over the wall?" Behind me, Mr. Seabrook staggered out of the rec center. He was armed with one of his emergency backup guns.
"Can't talk now," I yelped, ducking behind a newly walled home.
Bullets plugged the stucco behind me. The construction workers immediately stopped constructing and fled for cover. As Murray had explained, they weren't evil carpenters. They were merely independent contractors who had no idea they were working for an evil organization. They dropped their tools and scattered. Every one of them steered clear of me, as I was obviously the target Mr. Seabrook was shooting at. I fled down the dirt path between two unfinished houses,
then cut back behind one of them. Through the gaps in the wood frame, I could see several spider agents coming around the side of the rec center, heading my way. However, directly ahead of me was a bulldozer. I clambered up the tread and scrambled into the cab. I'd never driven a bulldozer before, or even a normal car for that matter. But I'd driven some go-karts, and at least had a rudimentary idea of how the thing probably worked. Sure enough, there was a gas pedal and a brake, along with a trio of joysticks to control it. Most important, the keys were still dangling in the ignition switch. I twisted them, and the engine roared to life. Through the windshield, I saw Mr. Seabrook taking aim. I dropped to the floor. Bullets shattered the glass above my head and pinged off the metal frame of the cab. The driver had left his hard hat in the cab. I strapped it on for good measure. Then I shoved one of the joysticks forward. The bulldozer didn't move. Instead, the wide metal blade on the front lifted off the ground. I hadn't meant to do this, but it turned out to be a pretty good move anyhow. The blade rose in front of the cab window, deflecting Mr. Seabrook's shots. I shoved the other joystick. Now the bulldozer lurched forward. It didn't move too quickly at first, only about the speed of my grandmother with her walker. I was momentarily worried. At this rate, the spider agents could catch up to me if they merely sauntered. But then I noticed a switch on the console that had two positions, Rabbit and Turtle. I flicked it to Rabbit. The bulldozer's engine revved, and the huge machine picked up speed. Not a lot of speed, but at least closer to a run than a crawl. I twisted the steering joystick toward the wall. The bulldozer pivoted that way. My intention suddenly became clear to the pursuing spider agents. They picked up the pace, charging after me. There was a big claw-like device on the back of the dozer. I quickly deduced that the third joystick controlled this and raised it to block the back window of the cab. Now, with the blade in front and the claw in back, I was well protected from gunfire. However, I was also blocking my line of sight. Driving a bulldozer wasn't easy to begin with. Doing it blind was nearly impossible. Luckily, when you're driving a bulldozer, it doesn't really matter if you bang into things, because you can pretty much knock anything out of your way. En route to the wall, I accidentally crushed a wheelbarrow, mulched a pile of lumber, and reduced a portable generator to scrap metal. Mr. Seabrook was still in pursuit of me, well ahead of the other agents, closing in quickly. Within another 15 seconds, he'd be even with the bulldozer and have a clear shot into the cab. So I veered into a row of porta-potties and flattened them. They popped like water balloons beneath my treads, spewing sewage. Mr. Seabrook was doused by a wave of excrement. He instantly forgot all about hunting me down and ran screaming back toward the rec center, desperate to shower off. Now all that stood between me and the wall were two newly framed homes. I steered for the gap in between them, which looked wide enough for a bulldozer. It turned out the gap was almost wide enough for a bulldozer, but not quite. The blade caught the wooden frames on both sides, then tore right through them. One wooden strut after another splintered, and without their support, the houses quickly began to buckle. The second floors tilted, sending anything that had been stored upstairs tumbling my way. Boxes of nails, toolboxes, toilets that hadn't been installed yet. Some clanged off the metal roof of the dozer, while others fell into its path and were quickly pulverized beneath the treads. Most of the spider agents who had been racing after me now stopped, fearing that pursuing me through the gap between the tilting homes had become a very bad career move. Only Coach G kept coming. "Move it, you cowards!" he bellowed at the others. "He's getting away!" The wall was getting closer, but I still had a few more yards to go, and on both sides of me the houses were on the verge of collapse. The remaining struts were warping and twisting as they struggled to support the second floors. The wood screeched as it torqued. Some struts ripped free of the foundation, while others exploded into toothpicks. Electrical wires snapped. A staircase tore apart. An opossum who'd been living in the rafters of one home tumbled onto the dozer roof and screeched at me angrily. "Ben, what's happening over there?" Erica shouted. "I'm almost to the wall," I reported. "Just a few more seconds." Coach G raced into the gap between the homes behind me. He was taking careful aim with his semi-automatic when a bathtub tumbled out of a second floor and landed on him. Luckily for Coach, the tub landed upside down, so instead of getting crushed, he merely ended up entombed beneath it in the muddy ground. The bulldozer tore through the last of the struts lining the gap. The moment they went, the houses seemed to give up any hope of remaining upright. Dozens of other struts immediately blew, and the structures came crashing down. They collapsed into the gap with a cacophony of shrieking wood and rending metal. A huge cloud of dust billowed out, enveloping me like a sandstorm. The wall vanished from sight, so I didn't even see it until the bulldozer slammed into it. The impact was so hard I was thrown forward. My hard hat clanged off the steering wheel. Thankfully, the bulldozer was merely slowed, not defeated. A web of cracks quickly spread through the wall where the blade had hit it. I pressed forward on the joystick, giving the engine all the power it had left. The wall trembled, then collapsed. The entire section in front of me crumbled like a saltine. On either side, the severed electric wires writhed and sparked like flaming snakes. I was safe inside the bulldozer, though. It rumbled through the hole, and just like that, I was outside the compound. I'd emerged onto the farm. A field spread before me, rows and rows of lettuce, which the dozer quickly began churning into coleslaw. Behind me, the spider agents were obscured by the collapsed homes and dust cloud, though I was sure they'd be coming for me soon. To my left, on the shoulder of the closest road, a recreational vehicle was parked with the engine running. From it, Erica and Alexander Hale were racing toward me. Alexander looked completely stunned by how I'd come through the wall. Erica looked as though she were trying her best not to look stunned. "Jump!" Erica yelled, "but leave the dozer going!" I did exactly as ordered, leaping from the moving bulldozer. I tumbled through the lettuce, rolled to my feet, and ran toward the Hales. They grabbed me by the arms and hustled me toward the RV. Behind us, the dozer kept on churning slowly across the field. Alexander looked very different than he had when I'd last seen him. He'd ditched his usual three-piece suit to go for a tourist vibe, wearing cargo shorts, a baseball cap, and a Hawaiian shirt, even though he was in New Jersey. However, the biggest change was how happy he looked. He seemed invigorated by being on a mission once again, now clean-shaven and grinning from ear to ear. "Well done, Benjamin," he cried. "Very original. Even I never used a bulldozer to escape an enemy compound. Wasn't that clever, Erica?"
"It was a bit flashy," Erica replied. She was wearing her standard outfit, all black and ready for action. Her clothes were skin tight, save for her utility belt. As we ran, she kept an eye on the hole I'd made in the wall, waiting for spider agents to emerge through it. The bulldozer plowed onward, heading in a different direction from us, trailing strings of barbed wire and other detritus. A toilet was perched atop the cab like a little porcelain hat. The opossum was seated on it, seeming to enjoy the ride. We reached the roadside and scrambled into the RV. Cyrus Hale was at the wheel. Cyrus was in his 70s, but could have passed for 20 years younger, if not more. He was dressed more like Erica than Alexander, wearing clothes designed for action rather than any pretense of being a tourist. His reaction to seeing me was closer to Erica's too, cool and unemotional. He didn't so much as nod hello.
"Buckle up, everyone," he said. "This could get hairy."
"I call shotgun," Alexander cried. In the Hale family, this didn't merely mean you got the seat next to the driver. You also had to use an actual shotgun. Erica and I grabbed the rear seats as Cyrus hit the gas. The RV swerved onto the road and rolled along at exactly the speed limit.
Dad? Alexander asked. "Shouldn't we be going, faster?"
Cyrus shot his son a disdainful look, which happened quite a lot.
"An RV tearing along the road here at 90 miles an hour will look suspicious. We don't want to draw any attention right now. There's still a chance we can decoy our way out of this without resorting to gunplay."
I scoped out the interior of the RV, hoping that perhaps it was some sort of high-tech surveillance vehicle designed to merely look like an RV. Instead, it was just an RV, and an old one at that. The Naugahyde seats were stained, the linoleum floor was peeling, and the whole thing smelled like a boys' locker room. A lot of surveillance equipment had been installed inside, but not in a way that made it look sleek or cool. Instead, it was jury-rigged and haphazard. A great deal of duct tape had been used, which meant Cyrus had probably done it. He was a big fan of duct tape. To my surprise, there was also a cat in the RV. A scraggly calico with mismatched eyes bounded into Alexander's lap.
"What's that?" I asked.
"Mr. Wigglebottom," Alexander exclaimed.
"It's the cat I threw over the wall to distract Joshua from you the other night," Erica explained. "Daddy wouldn't let us take him back to the pound."
"Because he loves me,"
Alexander gave the cat a scratch behind the ears.
"Don't you, Mr. Wigglebottom? Yes, you do. Yes, you do."
Cyrus rolled his eyes and muttered something under his breath. Behind us, spider agents began to pour through the hole in the wall around Hidden Forest. Now that Mr. Seabrook and Coach G were out of commission, Mrs. Henderson was leading the charge. Thankfully, no one took any notice of our rickety old RV. Instead, they all ran after the bulldozer, which was still chugging across the lettuce patch. A few spider SUVs raced out of the front gates of the community, but they all went after the bulldozer too, quickly veering off the road and driving through the dirt.
Cyrus watched them all in the rearview mirror, then shifted his gaze to Alexander.
See what I mean? Those dinks didn't know Ben had backup close by. They still think he's on his own. For now.
I watched as all the spider agents closed in on the bulldozer, ignoring us completely. Just as they were about to catch up to it, we rounded a bend in the road, and they disappeared behind a stand of trees. Now that we were out of their sight, Cyrus hit the gas. It turned out the RV had been slightly modified. The engine had been souped up, and the RV shot down the road with surprising speed. Given that it was an RV, however, it still wasn't going to outrun an SUV, and it wouldn't be long before Spider realized there was only an opossum driving the bulldozer and figure out I'd hitched a ride.
"How long do you think the decoy bought us?" I asked.
"A minute, if we're lucky," Cyrus replied, then glanced back at me. "So what'd you find in the safe?"
"It was a trap." I pulled out the note Joshua had left for me and handed it to Erica. Erica read it. "Ben, I guess we can't trust you after all. Joshua." She frowned, looking as defeated as I'd ever seen her. Alexander took the note from her and sagged as well.
"They were on to us the whole time."
"Well, they were suspicious, at least."
Cyrus pounded the steering wheel angrily.
"Dang it! We tanked an inside man for this!"
He suddenly veered off the road. The RV lurched into the parking lot of a diner. Mr. Wigglebottom pitched out of Alexander's lap and landed on the floor with a yowl. Cyrus swerved around to the back of the restaurant and skidded to a stop by the trash bins. The Hale family unbuckled themselves and leapt from their seats.
"Whoa," I said. "We're eating? Now?"
"We're ditching the RV," Cyrus grumbled. "Spider's agents must have seen it just now, and they've certainly realized you're not in that bulldozer anymore, so they're going to be looking for it."
He grabbed a steel case off the floor and shoved it into my hands.
"Take this, and skedaddle. We don't have much time."
Erica and Alexander were already slipping out the door with similar steel cases, heading for a nondescript sedan parked by the trash bins. Mr. Wigglebottom scampered after them. Alexander opened the passenger door and shouted, "Shotgun!" again. I followed them, piling into the back seat with Erica. Cyrus slid into the driver's seat and told Alexander,
"Leave the cat."
"He can't come?"
Alexander asked, upset.
"No pets on a mission," Cyrus stated flatly. "You can come back for him if we survive."
Alexander sadly set the cat on the ground.
"Don't worry, Mr. Wigglebottom," he said. "I'll come back for you. I promise."
Mr. Wigglebottom strolled away unconcerned, like he had already forgotten about us. Alexander sniffled and wiped away a tear. Cyrus muttered under his breath again and motored slowly around to the front of the restaurant. Sure enough, two spider SUVs came flying down the road, going double the speed limit. The RV was hidden well enough behind the diner that they didn't notice it and shot right past us. Cyrus gave them a 30-second head start, making sure they hadn't spotted us, then pulled out of the parking lot and started down the road behind them.
"Ben, during your period undercover in Spider's compound, did you learn anything about this plot of theirs, other than when it's happening?"
I met his gaze in the rearview mirror.
"No," I admitted.
Cyrus's gaze hardened.
"Well, that's just great," he grumbled. "We all took a big risk on you, kid, bigger than you can imagine. And for what? Nothing."
"Sorry,"
I mumbled, feeling completely useless. Cyrus floored the gas angrily. We shot past two gated communities that, save for their names, looked exactly like Hidden Forest.
"Where are we going?" I asked meekly. "Back to the CIA?"
Cyrus gave a derisive snort in response.
"We've gone rogue from the CIA on this mission," Erica told me. "The agency doesn't like rogues. If we go back there with no intel, they'll have our heads."
"Then where?" I began.
"To our only lead so far," Erica said. "Sandy Hook."
Chapter 17. Nautical Exercises. Lower New York Harbor. September 17, 1700 hours. It took us most of the day to get back to Sandy Hook. Since there was only one road leading there, Cyrus didn't want to use it.
"Too dangerous," he explained. "Know why they call them dead-end roads? 'Cause you end up dead on them. It'd be way too easy for Spider to cut off our escape route. If they're waiting for us there, we might as well kiss our keisters goodbye."
However, since Sandy Hook was a peninsula, there were plenty of ways in and out across the water. That was the much safer option, as far as Cyrus was concerned. The problem was, coming in by water required a boat, and we didn't have one. Cyrus had some ideas how to get one, though, so we worked our way through the suburbs of New Jersey to the waterfront in Jersey City. This took several hours, because even though we appeared to have shaken the spider agents, Cyrus was certain they were still hunting for us. He stuck to back roads, made huge detours to avoid potential ambush sites, and every time he heard a helicopter, he'd pull over under the cover of trees and wait for it to pass. "Come on, Dad," Alexander chided the fifth time this happened. "You really think Spider has choppers in the air looking for us?"
"I didn't get to be this old by letting my guard down," Cyrus snapped. "As far as I'm concerned, there's nothing I'd put past Spider."
Once we finally arrived in Jersey City, Cyrus ordered us to drop him off near a high-end marina. It was located in front of some shiny new condos on the waterfront, and the slips were full of expensive watercraft. Fancy wooden sailboats, gleaming motorboats, and a few yachts that were bigger than my house. The rest of us headed south to the docks where the container ships unloaded. Cyrus had pinpointed one that was under repair, so we parked there, hiding the car in a maze of rusted old shipping containers, then went to the water's edge to wait. It was possibly the least beautiful place I'd ever been. The water's surface was slick with oil and choked with garbage, while the abandoned ship cranes loomed over us like the skeletons of dinosaurs. A half hour later, Cyrus arrived, driving a cigarette boat. It was built for speed, thin and aerodynamic, with a pair of 600 horsepower engines in the back. The cockpit was small and uncovered. There were only four seats. The boat was painted neon blue with flames on the sides. The rest of us quickly climbed into the cockpit. There was barely enough room for us in our four steel cases.
"Where'd you get this?" Erica asked.
Cyrus chuckled. "I liberated it."
"You mean it's stolen?"
Alexander demanded.
"The owner doesn't deserve it."
Cyrus motored away from the dock into the Hudson River.
"He's a criminal."
"What'd he do?" I asked.
"It'd be faster to list what he hasn't done," Cyrus replied. "The guy's dirty as they come, though the government's never been able to nail him on anything. I figure at the very least the guy can let us borrow his boat for a few hours. For all we know, the jerk's off on the French Riviera anyhow."
Erica looked over the paint job.
"It's a little garish, don't you think?"
Cyrus shrugged.
"Yeah, it's tacky, but since we're heading for the Jersey Shore, we ought to fit right in."
He took us through the channel between the mainland and Staten Island, then hugged the shoreline. He did his best not to draw attention, driving at moderate speeds and falling in with other recreational boaters. The warm weather had kept up, and lots of people were out on the water, many in boats just as ostentatious as ours. We arced along the Jersey coast, then approached Sandy Hook from the west, keeping the setting sun at our backs.
"Is anyone going to explain to me what's going on?" I asked.
I'd posed the question in varying ways at several other times that day, only to be rebuffed. Erica and Alexander both looked to Cyrus, who nodded imperceptibly that it was finally all right to fill me in on what was going on.
"Sandy Hook isn't just a beach," Erica explained. "It's also an extremely important military site."
"Since when?" I asked.
"Since 1812, Erica replied. "It's perfectly situated for defending New York City because it overlooks the main route there from the Atlantic. The United States first built a fort at Sandy Hook during the War of 1812 to protect New York from the British Navy, and it's been used for defense ever since. In the 1950s, they installed Project Nike missile silos there to fend off Soviet nuclear strikes."
"Is that what those buildings were that Murray was taking pictures of?" I asked. "Old missile silos?"
"Yes. Sandy Hook was Nike Site 56.
Erica handed me a pair of binoculars. I zoomed in on the peninsula ahead. Before, I had only been on the eastern side of it, my view of the west blocked by the dunes. Now I could see there were quite a few buildings on the western side, squat cement bunkers and rusted metal silos.
"I thought all the Nike missile sites were shut down after the Cold War," I said.
"Not true," Erica replied. "The military just told the public that to throw off our enemies. They even let the silos look like they're going to seed, but they're still completely functional, and there are still missiles stored inside to protect the city."
"And Spider's trying to steal them?" I concluded.
"That's our best guess," Cyrus said. "It's all we've got, seeing as you didn't learn any other information for us."
I sighed. Cyrus Hale might have been one of the finest spies our country had ever produced, but he could also be a real jerk. I was feeling ineffectual enough without him reminding me how ineffectual I was every few minutes.
"So you suspected Spider was after the missiles when Murray first brought me here?" I asked.
"Of course," Cyrus said. "Why else would they be sniffing around Sandy Hook?"
"What do you think Spider intends to do with them?"
"I have no idea," Cyrus replied curtly. "That was what you were supposed to find out."
In the shotgun seat, Alexander glanced back at me, looking a bit embarrassed about his father.
"You know, Ben actually did quite a good job under the circumstances," he said. "This was only his first undercover mission, and it wasn't an easy one."
"What would you know about doing a good job?" Cyrus snapped.
Alexander recoiled, looking wounded.
"I did save your life once."
Instead of acknowledging this, Cyrus said,
"We're almost there. Time for you to get out of those ridiculous clothes."
Alexander nodded sadly, then opened the steel case he'd been carrying. Erica opened hers as well. I figured this meant I ought to open mine, too. Inside it was everything I'd need for my mission. A black outfit that matched the one Cyrus and Erica were wearing, night vision goggles, and a small grappling hook. But while Erica had a gun in her case, I'd been given only a bottle of chloroform and a handkerchief. There wasn't any place in the boat's small cockpit for Alexander or me to change clothes in private, so Erica turned away while the two of us stripped down to our underwear and pulled on our new black outfits. The clothes were sleek and practical, though they weren't as suave and cool as the suits Alexander usually wore. Instead, the four of us looked more like a renegade circus troupe. Instead of pockets, we each had a utility belt. There were also bulletproof Kevlar vests for protection, which was nice, though I would have liked Kevlar pants and a Kevlar helmet as well. I doused my handkerchief with chloroform, then tucked the bottle into one pocket of my utility belt and left the hanky sticking out of another, where I'd have easy access to it. Figuring out where to put the grappling hook was a little more difficult. I still hadn't had any formal training with grappling hooks. You didn't cover them until your second year at spy school. Intro to grapples, rappels, and other vertical access methods. And they weren't the type of thing you encountered in normal life. I'd never had much use for grappling until being recruited to the CIA. There was a revolver-size air gun that fired the hook, which had a coil of thin steel cable attached to it. I fitted the hook into the gun, then struggled to figure out how to clip it onto the utility belt.
"Here," Erica said, "let me help you with that."
I pulled away from her.
"Oh, now you want to help me?"
My own words caught me by surprise. I hadn't realized how angry I was at Erica until then. Erica seemed surprised as well. She looked at me curiously.
"What's that supposed to mean? I've been plenty of help to you on this mission."
"A mission you put me on without even asking if I wanted to do it," I said bitterly. I knew I probably should have been keeping my thoughts to myself, bottling them up the way Erica did, but I couldn't help it. "Instead, you just manipulated me into it. You got me booted from spy school. You'll be reinstated if all this works out. And I could get killed if it doesn't. You put me in serious danger here."
"Danger is part of life at the CIA. I thought you wanted to be an agent."
"And I thought you were my friend." Erica pursed her lips. For a moment, I thought I saw the slightest hint of emotion in her eyes. But then it was gone.
"You can't afford to have friends in this business," she said coldly.
"Personal connections compromise your ability to perform."
"Personal connections," I repeated. "You're on this mission with your whole family. This is like a road trip for you."
"That's not by choice," Erica said. "The unauthorized nature of this mission required using this particular team."
"So that's all I am to you?" I asked. "Someone who you work with when you have to?"
Erica fixed me with a blank stare.
"Emotions can severely complicate a mission. It's best not to form attachments. Suppose Spider is plotting to kill millions of people and you had the chance to destroy their operation, but Joshua Halal takes me hostage. Now you have a choice. Save me or complete the mission. Which would you choose?"
I frowned, knowing what the right answer was, but not wanting to say it.
"That won't happen."
"It could," Erica warned.
"And if it does, you have to sacrifice me for the mission, not the other way around. I'd do the same thing, and so would Granddad and my father. You can't have millions of people die to save one person."
I sighed. Erica's argument made sense, and yet it seemed so wrong.
"So the solution is to go through life without friends?"
"Yes," Erica said.
"You're not saying that just because Joshua broke your heart?"
Erica turned on me. The temperature on the boat seemed to suddenly drop 10 degrees, though I wasn't sure if it was because of Erica's cold gaze or the fact that the sun was setting. Finally, Erica said,
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"Yes, you do," I said. "You liked him. Just because he turned out to be the biggest jerk of all time doesn't mean everyone else will. Friends aren't always a liability. Sometimes they're the best asset we have." Before Erica could respond, Cyrus announced,
"Can the chit-chat, you two. Time for stealth mode. No talking unless absolutely necessary."
He shut off the engines and handed a paddle to each of us. Without the roar of the big motors, it was startlingly quiet. Even though New York sat only a few miles to the north of us, the wide expanse of water swallowed up the sounds of the city. When I looked south toward the modest homes on the Jersey shore, it was easy to imagine that I was off the coast of some rural fishing village. To the east, Sandy Hook appeared completely uninhabited. We paddled toward it. It was hard work, and we had a mile to cover. As we went, the night grew darker, covering our approach. We strapped on our night vision goggles and scanned the shore. No one was moving. The Nike site looked like a Cold War-era ghost town. When we were 100 yards from shore, Cyrus signaled us to stop rowing. The current caught us, carrying us the rest of the way. There wasn't a single light on at Sandy Hook. The peninsula was merely a silhouette that grew as we came closer to it, until finally the waves slid the cigarette boat gently onto the sand. We beached a bit north of the main building complex, where some scrub grew close to the water. We dragged some of it down to the water's edge to hide the boat, sending up clouds of pollen. Alexander wrinkled his nose at the smell, and then his eyes opened wide in alarm. He began huffing in air, building up to what looked to be an enormous sneeze. Cyrus wheeled on him with a "don't you dare make a noise" expression. Alexander looked around desperately, spotted the handkerchief poking out of my utility belt, snatched it away, and placed it to his nose, stifling the sneeze at the last second. He sighed with relief, and then realized, a bit too late, that the rag was soaked in chloroform.
"Oh, shoot,"
he said, and then collapsed face first onto the sand. Cyrus and Erica rolled their eyes, then headed toward the silo complex, leaving Alexander snoring softly on the beach. I felt a little bad about leaving him behind, but he wasn't going to wake anytime soon, and I knew we couldn't delay our mission a moment longer. It was coming up on 8 o'clock. Even with the night vision goggles, Cyrus and Erica were almost impossible to see as they slunk along. They melted into the shadows, becoming a part of them. I did my best to mimic their movements, praying that I wouldn't screw up like Alexander had. There were 3 missile silos on the property, sunk deep in the ground, covered by large round metal lids that would slide open when the time came to fire. The access was through 3 cement bunkers, which were the low, squat buildings I had seen at the beach. We were almost to the first bunker when we finally encountered some guards. Unfortunately, just like Alexander, they were sprawled on the ground. They were unconscious rather than dead, though this did little to relieve my fear. Spider had obviously beaten us there. Cyrus pressed a finger to the neck of one of the guards, taking his pulse.
"How long has he been out?" Erica whispered.
"At least half an hour," Cyrus replied, his voice laced with concern.
I shifted my gaze to the nearby bunker. There were no windows and only one door, 5 feet tall and made of rusted steel. It hung open. Cyrus led us through it. A metal staircase plunged downward, almost exactly like the secret one at Hidden Forest. It was as though any organization that needed a covert underground lair used the same architect. We crept down it, spiraling several stories into the earth until we arrived in a large room. While Spider's underground lair had been tastefully decorated and homey, this room was cold and industrial. The walls, floor, and ceiling were all concrete. It was lit by bare bulbs dangling from electrical wires, and the furniture all appeared to be relics from the Cold War: metal desks, folding chairs, a water cooler. However, the missile systems had been upgraded relatively recently. The computers on the desks were only a few years out of date, which qualified as modern for the government, and the large screens that would be used to track incoming missiles were of decent quality. Except for us, the room was empty, which was unsettling in a command center that was supposed to be staffed 24 hours a day, weekends and holidays included. Cyrus and Erica seemed worried by this as well. There was only one other door besides the one we had come through. It was a thick steel affair, like you'd expect to find on a bank vault, rigged with all sorts of alarms and marked by dozens of signs saying it shouldn't be opened for any reason. It was open. Since the alarms weren't ringing, I assumed they'd been dismantled. Cyrus headed for the door. Erica and I followed. We passed through a cement wall several feet thick and found ourselves at the base of the missile silo. The missile was still there, towering above us. I didn't get a very good look at it, though. I was too distracted by the explosives. A ring of dynamite was strapped around the base of the missile with duct tape. I'd never seen dynamite outside of a Bugs Bunny cartoon, but it looked exactly as I expected. Foot-long red tubes with wires sticking out of them. All the wires snaked to a small electronic device that was also duct-taped to the missile. There was a timer on the device. It showed that there were 4 minutes and 13 seconds left until everything exploded. Spider wasn't planning on stealing the missiles after all. They were destroying them instead. Cyrus Hale considered all the dynamite, and then ran.
"Come on," he yelled, bolting out of the silo. "Move your butts before they get blasted off."
Erica and I followed right behind him. "You're not going to defuse it?" I asked as we dashed back through the control room. Now that Cyrus had spoken, I figured I had free rein to speak as well.
"How many great CIA bomb diffusers have you ever heard of?" Cyrus demanded.
None, I answered.
"Exactly. There aren't any. Because people who try to defuse bombs get killed."
Cyrus pounded up the staircase ahead of us.
"But if Spider's trying to destroy the missiles," Erica protested, "shouldn't we be trying to thwart their plans?"
"Defusing that bomb would take way more than 4 minutes," Cyrus explained. "I'll bet you Spider's up to more than just blowing up those missiles. And we're not going to be able to thwart them if we've been reduced to smithereens. Standard operating procedure in this case isn't to risk our lives with the bomb. It's to get the holy heck away from it."
He burst through the door at the top of the stairs, then stopped so suddenly that Eric and I slammed into him from behind. I started to ask Cyrus what the problem was, but then noticed he had his hands in the air. And after that, I noticed the 20 men aiming guns at us. They were arrayed in a semicircle around the door of the bunker, cutting off any route of escape.
"Cyrus Hale,"
a voice announced from the darkness.
"This is the CIA. You and your associates are under arrest."
"Nuts," Cyrus said.
Chapter 18. Evacuation. Site 56, September 17, 2000 hours. I raised my hands the same way Cyrus had, hoping he knew how to get us out of this mess and do it quickly. Due to my innate sense of time, I was well aware there were only 2 minutes and 30 seconds left until the dynamite blew. If Cyrus was worried, though, he didn't show it. He simply squinted into the darkness at the CIA agent who had spoken and asked,
"Rafferty, is that you?"
"That's affirmative,"
Agent Rafferty replied. He was middle-aged and pear-shaped, standing behind his men in the center of the line.
Cyrus said, "Think we could lower the guns and continue this discussion a few hundred yards from here? This silo's rigged to blow in a couple of minutes."
"Yeah, right," Rafferty said. "I'm not falling for that old routine. You think I'm an idiot?"
"I don't think that at all," Cyrus said. "I know you're an idiot."
Rafferty sputtered angrily, then exclaimed,
"I'm not the one who defected from the CIA and then illegally infiltrated a top-secret military base."
"I did no such thing," Cyrus shot back. "Don't you think it's suspicious that you showed up here exactly when I did? Let me guess what happened. About 15 minutes ago, you received a classified AA red alert from Internal Affairs, detailing my arrival here along with a warning that I'd left the agency to pursue some evil scheme or another. Furthermore, this alert told you exactly where and when to find me."
Yes, Rafferty admitted.
"Does that sound like something that I'd do?" Cyrus demanded. "After everything I've done for this country, I would never betray the agency. I'm on a classified mission hunting down the subversive organization that has rigged this silo to blow. That same organization sent you the red alert, not the CIA. And by keeping your guns on us right now, you're playing into their hands. They've set us all up."
For a moment, Rafferty almost looked convinced, but then he shook his head.
"The alert I got couldn't possibly have been a fake. It had an official code that checked out."
"These guys have infiltrated the CIA," Cyrus exclaimed. "One of their moles sent that to you."
Rafferty shook his head and clucked his tongue.
"Listen to yourself, Cyrus. You're saying I'm a fool to think you'd go join the enemy. But instead, I should believe some top-secret evil organization has infiltrated the entire CIA?"
Cyrus sighed, then muttered to us under his breath,
"Like I said, he's an idiot. How much time till detonation, Ben?"
15 seconds.
"Get ready to run for the boat."
Cyrus returned his attention to Rafferty and the CIA.
"Agents, all of you know who I am and what I stand for. I swear I'm telling you the truth. So before you back Rafferty over me, there's one thing you ought to know."
At which point, the silo exploded. Cyrus, Erica, and I were prepared for it, or at least we were as prepared as you can possibly be for an entire missile complex to detonate beneath your feet. The other CIA agents were completely caught by surprise. Apparently none of them had believed Cyrus's warning. A column of flame erupted behind us, shredding the silo and sending huge sheets of rusted metal cartwheeling through the air. The ground trembled as though an earthquake had hit. Cracks spread through the earth at our feet and fractured the cement bunker into pieces. And then the other two missile silos at Sandy Hook blew as well. The explosions were farther away, but just as big, turning night into day and spewing dirt and metal. Many of the CIA agents were thrown to the ground by the blasts. Others were temporarily blinded by them. Most of the rest scattered, gibbering in fear. I ran for the boat as I'd been ordered. Erica and Cyrus were right there with me. We barreled past the startled agents blocking our way. Two regained their wits long enough to try to stop us, but Cyrus and Erica made quick work of them. There was a sudden flurry of arms and legs, and the next thing either agent knew, they were on the ground, wheezing in pain. A little farther away, a third agent was wheeling toward us with his gun. I defended myself with the only weapon I had, my grappling hook.
I fired the air gun, launching the metal grapple at the enemy.
I'd been aiming for his head, hoping to knock him unconscious, but, as usual, my aim was off and I nailed him in the groin instead. It worked, though. The agent dropped his gun and doubled over, whimpering.
"That's not exactly the recommended way to use this," Erica chided, snatching the grapple off the ground as we ran past.
"You know a better way to take out the enemy with a grappling hook? Watch and learn."
The ground was collapsing behind us, forming a crater where the missile had once been. A huge chunk of bunker sheared off and tumbled inside. We sprinted as fast as we could, trying to stay ahead of the expanding hole. Craters were also growing where the other explosions had occurred. Lit by fire and flame from within, they looked like volcanoes sprouting on the beach. By now, Rafferty and a few of the other agents had realized we were on the run. They came after us, steering clear of the craters as well. Rafferty shouted something that might have been, "Curse you, Cyrus!" though I couldn't hear it clearly over all the noise. Erica reloaded my grappling hook into the air gun, then fired it at a tree a few feet away. The grapple whipped around a low branch and held tight. Erica then jammed the gun into the crook of another tree, yanking the wire tight across the path 5 feet above the ground. She did this so fluidly she didn't miss a step. Even with all the explosions and fires around, the thin wire was almost invisible in the night. You'd only notice it if you knew to look for it. Rafferty and his men didn't know to look for it. They were too focused on us, or on the exploding missiles, or the flaming craters, or the random smoking objects that were now beginning to plummet from the sky. Behind us, I heard Rafferty yell, "If you don't stop, I will order my men to..." There was a metallic twang as he and all his agents caught the wire in the chest simultaneously and were knocked flat on their backs. Erica flashed me a cocky smile. "See? You only took down one person with it." We kept on running, leaving the imploding missile base behind as quickly as possible. The cigarette boat was right where we had left it, as was Alexander, who had somehow slept through all the noise. He woke as we shoved the boat back into the water, still woozy from the chloroform, and blinked in confusion at the fire and chaos down the beach.
"Ooh," he said groggily. "Fireworks. Is it Independence Day already?"
"And he wonders why I never invited him on a mission before," Cyrus grumbled.
Erica grabbed Alexander by the arm and helped him to his feet. "Come on, Dad, we have to go."
"On a boat ride?" Alexander asked. "Sounds delightful."
We got the boat off the sand, then angled it toward the middle of the bay and clambered into the cockpit. Alexander tumbled in face first, his legs sticking up in the air. Several more explosions suddenly flared in the night. They were so far away we didn't hear the booms until 15 seconds later, but the blasts were bright and clear, orange mushrooms blooming on the horizon. Three were to the northeast of New York City, and three were to the northwest.
"What's that?" I asked.
"Sandy Hook wasn't the only active missile site near New York," Cyrus said, firing up the engines. "Looks like Spider just hit the others, too."
Rafferty and his agents had gotten back to their feet and were charging our way again. Down the beach I saw them readying their guns. Cyrus revved the motor and we roared away, kicking up a huge rooster tail of water just as the CIA opened fire. I breathed a huge sigh of relief and sagged into my seat.
"Stay alert," Cyrus warned. "We're not out of this yet."
He pointed behind us. The CIA had called for backup. Three boats were coming from the direction of the missile base. Gunfire erupted from them. Bullets stitched the surface of the water behind us. Erica grabbed for her gun to return fire, but Cyrus shook his head.
"No shooting back. They're fellow agents, not the enemy."
"We're agents too," Erica protested, "and they're shooting at us."
"They've been hoodwinked by Spider," Cyrus said, "and Spider would probably like nothing better than for us to do their dirty work for them and blow one another away. But we're not playing that game."
"What game are we playing, then?" Alexander asked. "How about Parcheesi? I love Parcheesi." If we can't fight back, what's our plan? I asked.
I didn't get this boat because it looked pretty, Cyrus explained. I got it for the speed. We ought to be able to outrun them.
And them, too? Erica asked, pointing to our port side.
More boats were coming. It was hard to tell in the dark, but it looked like the New Jersey police had mobilized their marine division as well.
Dang it, Cyrus growled. Spider wasn't taking any chances with this. We played right into their devious little hands.
He yanked hard on the wheel, veering away from the Jersey police boats as well.
How's that? I asked.
The motors were roaring so loud, Cyrus had to shout his response.
There's no way the NJPD would have boats out this fast if the CIA had just called them. Those silos went up only a few minutes ago. That means Spider probably tipped them off well ahead of time, too, the same as they did with the CIA.
You think they have moles inside the Jersey police, too? Erica asked.
No, Cyrus replied, I don't think they're that big. They probably just phoned in a tip and got the police on their toes, so when the missiles went off, they were ready to roll.
But with the CIA, they definitely used an inside man? I asked.
Rafferty wouldn't have been able to mobilize an agency team that big unless he thought word was really coming from on high.
Cyrus shook his head, looking annoyed at himself.
Spider played us just like they played you. They fed us a single crumb, Sandy Hook, knowing that we'd bite. Then they rigged the missiles and set us up so that we'd take the fall for it. They probably hoped we'd all get killed in the blast, but this still works out for them just fine. We're the only ones who know Spider's plotting something, and now they've got the CIA chasing us, freeing them to pursue their evil plans. It's deviously brilliant, really.
Thankfully, the CIA and the Jersey police weren't gaining on us. Our boat was going so fast, it seemed to be skipping across the water. It wasn't very comfortable, though. We kept slamming up and down on the surface, hard enough to rattle my teeth. Salt water pelted us as we smashed through wave after wave, leaving my eyes stinging from the brine and my body shivering from the wet. Only Alexander seemed to be having fun, and that was because he was still zonked from the chloroform.
"Whee!" he cried. "This is fun! We should go boating more often, Dad."
"This might be naive," I said to Cyrus, "but is there any sense in letting them catch us? After all, you're a legend in the CIA. Wouldn't someone higher up listen to you if you explained what was going on? How could they even think that you, of all people, have joined the enemy?" Cyrus sighed, and for a moment he looked much older.
"Sadly, there's precedent. I wouldn't be the first highly regarded agent to switch sides, especially at my age. People get packed off into retirement and have a tough time adjusting to the real world on a skimpy pension. After you've spent your whole life fighting for freedom and democracy, early bird specials and bingo nights don't really cut it. In fact, I suspect Spider already has a legend or two working for them. It'd explain how they have such good intel on how the agency works. And the top brass probably has come to the same conclusion, which means I wouldn't be above suspicion.
We could prove we weren't behind this, Erica argued. I'm sure there's surveillance footage showing Spider entering the silos long before we got there.
It's probably been blown to bits, Cyrus said, along with everything else at Sandy Hook.
Even so, I protested, if they grill us, we all have the exact same story, which should indicate we're not lying.
True, Cyrus agreed. They'd figure it out eventually. But you've been grilled before, kid. You know how that goes. By the time we finally sell them our story, Spider will have already launched phase two of their plan. And I can guarantee you there's a phase two. They didn't decimate Sandy Hook right now just to take us out of the game.
What are they going to do? Erica asked.
Cyrus shrugged.
Don't ask me. Ask Ben. He's our undercover man.
Unlike before, Cyrus wasn't trying to be dismissive of me with this statement. He was too upset at himself for being manipulated by Spider to be upset at me as well. But I felt guilty just the same. I glanced back toward Sandy Hook, wondering what could be going on. I was sure that I'd encountered some clue or another as to Spider's ultimate plans during my time at Hidden Forest. Unfortunately, I hadn't made sense of it yet. Sandy Hook had dropped far in the distance. The blazing fires were now mere dots of orange on the horizon. But the CIA and the Jersey police were still keeping pace with us. Their boats were as souped up as ours was. As I watched, they unleashed another fusillade of bullets, one of which pocked the stern of our boat.
All right, Cyrus said determinedly. Time to shake these guys.
We had reached the narrow gap between Staten Island and Brooklyn, and the going suddenly became much more treacherous. There was a lot more traffic, fleets of fishermen and pleasure boats returning home after a day out on the water, as well as massive container ships from Jersey and a cruise ship from Manhattan on their way out to sea. We were a minnow beside these whales and were probably supposed to give them right of way, but we didn't have time for that. Instead, Cyrus slalomed through them, trying to lose our pursuers, resulting in some terrifyingly close calls. We barely avoided being flattened by one outbound freighter and nearly got pureed by the rear propellers of another.
"Woo-hoo!" Alexander yelled.
Behind us, the CIA and the NJPD got lost in the shuffle. Only one boat, the lead for the CIA, managed to follow us through, only to get clipped by the cruise ship. It was as though a kid had capsized his bathtub toy. The CIA boat was flipped on its side, catapulting the agents into the harbor. Cyrus chuckled to himself.
"That ought to keep the agency off our trail."
"But what about the New York police?" Erica asked, pointing ahead of us. I looked in that direction and groaned. I think Cyrus might have even done the same. Sure enough, the NYPD had been alerted about us as well, and they were coming in full force. It looked as though Homeland Security and the U.S. Coast Guard had joined the hunt. A dozen boats were converging on us, as well as two helicopters, which shot overhead, spotlights sweeping the water.
"Hang on," Cyrus warned. "This might get dangerous."
"Now it's getting dangerous?" I gasped. "What was that before?"
"Mildly treacherous."
Cyrus suddenly veered wildly to starboard. This kicked up a wall of water, which temporarily shielded us from view, while Cyrus quickly switched direction again. We blasted through our own wave and bore down on our attackers, aiming for a narrow gap between two police boats. The police shouted warnings at us through their bullhorns, and when we didn't stop, they opened fire. We dropped onto the floor of the cockpit and curled up tight, pulling our Kevlar vests over our heads like safety blankets. Bullets raked both sides of us as we zoomed between the police boats. I could hear things cracking and splintering above my head. One shot must have glanced off my Kevlar. It felt like someone had pounded it with a hammer. And then the shooting stopped. We were through the gap, and the other boats were struggling to pull U-turns and come after us. I sat up to find the neon blue paneling of our cigarette boat shredded, the windshield riddled with holes, and one engine trailing smoke.
"Hey,"
Alexander said, his chloroform haze finally dissipating.
"Those people were trying to kill us. This isn't fun at all."
"Nice of you to join us."
Cyrus turned toward the pier in New Jersey, where we'd started out that night, but now saw there were reinforcements coming from that direction. A lot of reinforcements. 12 boats in all. Alexander's eyes grew as big as golf balls with fear.
"They've cut off our escape route."
"I've noticed."
Cyrus cursed under his breath and reoriented us toward the tip of Manhattan. All the other boats slewed in the water a bit as they changed course behind us, then revved their engines and rejoined the chase.
"Without an escape route, we can't escape,"
Alexander babbled.
"What do we do now?"
"Keep your pants on. I have a plan."
Cyrus kept his eyes locked on the city ahead.
"What is it?"
I asked.
"Leave the getaway to me," Cyrus said. "You focus on figuring out what Spider's up to. Without that, everything we're doing here is for naught."
I racked my brain, struggling to make sense of everything I'd seen and heard over the past few weeks. It would have been difficult under normal circumstances, but I found it almost impossible to concentrate with the bullets flying and the boat jouncing over the water, and Alexander whimpering and the constant threat of death everywhere around us. The fact that Erica was staring at me expectantly also didn't help. After a mere 15 seconds had gone by, she asked,
"Well, any ideas?"
"No," I admitted. "None."
"Then think harder."
"What is that even supposed to mean?" I snapped. "How could I possibly think harder? That's like telling someone to see harder or taste harder. The problem isn't that I'm not thinking hard enough. It's that your stupid plan to send me undercover wasn't any good."
Erica's cold stare grew even colder.
"Our plan was perfectly fine." Cyrus sliced directly behind another container ship, which had left a cavernous wake in its path. We launched into the air, sailed across it, and came down hard on the far side. One of the boats pursuing us wasn't as lucky. It plunged into the trough and flipped stern over bow, landing upside down in the harbor.
"Spider never believed I was really working with them," I argued. "They knew I was a mole the whole time. Any information they fed me was false."
Erica shook her head. "They might have suspected you were a mole, but they weren't sure. They wouldn't have brought you in merely to set us up. That'd be far too risky. They wanted you for something."
"No, they didn't. I was just a patsy."
One of our motors coughed and died, cutting our power in half. The pursuing boats quickly started gaining on us.
"You weren't a patsy," Erica told me. "Spider has always wanted you on their side. Because you're not as incompetent as you believe you are. So think. What did they want you for?"
"I don't know."
Did they train you for anything special? No. Did they ask you to do anything unusual? No. I haven't done anything for the past few weeks except workouts and math problems.
The moment the words were out of my mouth, I had a sudden flash of understanding. Everything that had happened at Hidden Forest fell into place. Everything I hadn't grasped instantly came into focus. Erica seemed to sense this. In the sweep of the helicopter searchlights, I saw her cold stare fade.
What is it?
I know what Spider's up to, I said. But that was as far as I got. As we passed Liberty Island, another police boat ambushed us. This one was built like ours, and it came up fast, looking to broadside us. Cyrus wrenched us to the right to avoid it, but with the other boats closing the gap and the helicopters overhead, there was nowhere for us to go. Gunfire rang out, and something sparked off our bow. Both engines went up in flames.
"Abandon ship!" Cyrus yelled.
"What?"
Alexander cried. Cyrus slammed into him a second later, lifting him up and over the side of the boat. Erica lunged for me in the same way, although I was already moving when she hit me. The engines blew as we jumped. The shockwave sent us cartwheeling through the air. I saw the city skyline flip over twice, and then the surface of the harbor smacked me in the face. It was like being punched in the head. I was dazed, only vaguely aware of the cold embrace of the water and the fact that I was sinking. I tried to swim, but something heavy snagged around my foot, dragging me down toward the bottom. Above me, at the surface, I saw the bright flare of the explosion, the churn of the bubbles as boats raced overhead, and a vision of a woman's face, all fading quickly as I was pulled farther and farther away. And then, the darkness swallowed me.
Chapter 19. Secure Location. Liberty Island, September 17, 2300 hours. I was only vaguely aware of being pulled from the water, the experience a jumble of images, the sensation of being dragged back up from the darkness and emerging into the light and noise once again, the roar of helicopter blades in the distance, the feeling of being hauled wet and cold onto muddy ground, Erica yelling, "Fight, Ben, fight!" and then leaning over me, a woman with a stoic gaze looming behind her, the groan of stone against stone as a passage opened in a rock, a Komodo dragon in a pink tutu doing pirouettes atop an elephant. It's quite possible that I dreamt the last one, as I lost consciousness more than once. I came to, lying on a cold granite floor. A voice echoed nearby while footsteps paced. Erica. She must have been on the radio with someone, because I couldn't hear their half of the conversation.
He hasn't regained consciousness yet, but he's stable. No, I'm not going to try to rouse him. He needs time to recover.
Yes, I understand what's at stake. What's the situation there? I opened my eyes and immediately wondered if I was still dreaming. Directly in front of me was a toe the size of a bathtub. It was bronze, part of an enormous bronze foot, which wore an enormous bronze sandal, draped by the fringe of an enormous bronze dress.
Let me guess, I groaned. We're inside the Statue of Liberty.
He's up, Erica reported into her radio. I'll call you back. I sat up, confirming my suspicions. We were inside the museum in the statue's base. The giant foot I'd been staring at wasn't part of the real statue. It was a scale model.
Erica stood by a smaller model of the entire statue in the middle of the room. She had traded her wet clothes for souvenirs from the gift shop, a tacky t-shirt and a beach towel, which she'd wrapped around her waist like a skirt. Without her usual primed-for-action outfit, she looked more like a normal teenage girl than usual. I realized that my wet clothes had been removed as well. I was cocooned in souvenir towels, naked save for my underwear. Erica hurried to my side, apparently relieved that I was conscious again.
How are you feeling?
All right, I guess. I met her eyes.
You saved me?
She nodded. The anchor rope snagged around your leg. By the time I got you free, you were... Well, it could have been bad.
You had to resuscitate me?
Yes. I felt my face grow warm as blood rushed to it. Erica immediately understood why I was blushing.
Don't get all worked up.
Yes, our lips touched, but it wasn't kissing. I was only forcing air into your lungs.
I know, I said, wishing I could remember it better. The bizarre thought occurred to me that it was almost worth dying to have my lips touch Erica's. How'd we get in here?
There's a secret entrance. Granddad knew about it. I'd had enough experience with the Hale family to guess what this meant.
Are you telling me that the Statue of Liberty is really part of some top-secret New York City defense system?
Yes. Although, unlike the Washington Monument, it's not really that big a secret.
The military started using this island back in 1807. The fort's not even hidden. They put the statue right on top of it. Erica pointed to a photo mounted on the wall, a bird's-eye view of the statue. I'd never seen the Statue of Liberty from above before. Now that I did, I was startled by how obvious the fortress was. What I'd always